Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Struggle is real sometimes around here, but we put our hand in the dirt and we press on. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline, Mike Golic Jr. and proud University of Virginia alum Chris Canty with us here. And Chris, we've talked about this on the show. We have had a lot of the silly season stuff in college football dominate headlines with both of our respective alma maters, Notre Dame and Virginia, having head coaching jobs come open. Last week, we got to talk to newly minted Notre Dame head coach Marcus Freeman, and I know you were very excited to welcome our next guest in today.
Absolutely. We have new head coach Tony Elliott on Canty and Golic Jr., and I'm so excited to be able to usher in this new era of Virginia football. Coach, first and foremost, congratulations on getting the gig. I know it's been a whirlwind for you, but how are you feeling now that you've been introduced as the next head coach of the University of Virginia football team?
Feels really good. Gentlemen, appreciate y'all thinking enough of me to bring me on, but it was kind of a surreal moment sitting in front of the cameras and delivering my first press conference. But, man, I'm excited, very humbled, truly honored to lead your alma mater in the future.
Coach, and we expect just that. I know you talked about in your press conference today the difference between building a team and building a program. Can you expand on that? What does that mean to you, and what's that going to mean to your players?
So for me, the difference between the two is one is relational and one is transactional. So we'll start with the team first. With the way college football is set up, the transfer portal, it's easy to go and assemble pieces and put them together and create a good team. But that doesn't mean that you're going to be able to sustain that from year to year. A program is built off of relationships, right? So you can lay a foundation and a culture, right? So that you can sustain success over the long haul. So what I plan to do and what the staff is going to do here at Virginia is, man, we're going to get back to the basics. We're going to make it about the right things. We're going to invest in the young people, and that's how we believe it's going to yield the success on the field. So we're going to be program focused with a culture and identity, and something that these guys can take pride in and appreciation, and then hopefully that's going to yield team after team, year in and year out, that can sustain success.
Coach, you mentioned the importance of relationships. We played against each other in the early 2000s. You at Clemson and me at UVA. And you actually played with my cousin Vontrell Jameson. And I texted him a couple of days ago, and he said once he realized that you were going to get the job, that we were going to absolutely love what Tony Elliott brought to the table. And so my question to you would be, because I know you've had opportunities to jump to the National Football League. You were actually interviewed for another head coaching job in college football in this cycle. What made UVA the right place, the right fit for you in this time?
Over the last 11 years, I've been fortunate to be at a place that I care deeply about, that valued me beyond my skill set as a football player, that gave me opportunity to grow and develop. And so as I started to think about what I wanted my head coaching opportunity to look like, I want to first and foremost be connected to an institution that has world-class academics, because it's college football, student-athlete. That's the most important thing. And I know how much football players love the game, but we all know that the game is going to end, and it's going to end before we want it to. So the focus needs to be education. And then I wanted to, be in an environment where we could do things the right way, that we weren't going to jeopardize the values of the institution, the values of the athletic department to win. Then I wanted to have an alignment from the president to the AD to myself. We all align with the same vision, and that vision is student athlete development focus. And then I wanted to be in a conference that was going to give me an opportunity to win a championship. So I was very specific in looking for those different qualities of the university, and it just so happened that this cycle, right? I didn't think that Virginia was going to be an option in this cycle, because I know that Coach Mendenhall and his staff were doing a great job here. But when this job came open, it was one that I'd had on my radar for a while, because I felt like it aligned with the values and the principles, and it had the things that I was looking for to create a program that could sustain success for the long haul and, you know, build young men in the process.
Ken Engel, Jr. here on ESPN Radio, talking to University of Virginia head football coach Tony Elliott on the Goodyear Hotline. And, Tony, Chris mentioned your background. Played wide out at Clemson where Dabo Sweeney was your position coach. Fast forward,
yes,
you've been the offensive coordinator, had that success with him as your head coach. So did he have any advice for you as you took off on this here? Something he told you on the way out here?
So, you know, all along, you know, coach has had a vested interest in helping me develop as a coach because he, you know, has a vision just like I have a vision of being a head coach. But what he would always tell me, I want you to be an old head coach. And in order to be an old head coach, you have to make sure that you make the right decisions as a young head coach and get yourself in a situation where you can be successful. And then he also talked a lot about being in an environment and a place where you can become rooted in that community. So I didn't want to, you know, be in a situation where I was taking a job to get a job. I wanted to go somewhere where I could fully invest in the program, fully invest in the university, fully invest in the community and raise my boys.
Coach, I'm an ACC guy, so I keep close tabs on what's going on in the conference. And since you had the opportunity to join your alma mater's coaching staff in 2011, that started a streak of 10 consecutive 10-plus win seasons. And the last time that Clemson actually had a double-digit win season before you got there was almost two decades prior to that. For UVA, the last time we had a 10-plus win season was 1989. So my question to you is, what's going to be the key to being able to elevate our program and get it to have that kind of sustained success?
It's just everybody understanding what the vision is and having complete alignment, and then the guys understanding the mindset and mentality that we're going to have to attack every single day with. We're going to have a formula for success. We're going to have a plan to win, and we're not going to focus on winning a championship, so to speak. We're going to know that that's the destination, but we're going to focus on the daily tasks and activities that are necessary to be able to ultimately reach your end goal. So it's going to be just a shift in mindset and then putting in the work and a belief that it's going to happen. And off of that belief, we're going to continue to grind every single day so that we can bring that vision to life.
Coach, before we let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring this up. I saw Ross Dellinger wrote a great article on your background. For anyone unaware, an industrial engineering major with a 3.55 GPA that started off working in a Michelin tire plant in South Carolina. I'm curious how much carryover there is from that to what you've done as a football coach. Like, are there things you take from being an engineer that have helped you as a football coach now?
You know, being an engineer, obviously there's different disciplines, but the biggest thing that I learned, you know, going through school is just having a methodical thought process, being able to think 2 to 3 steps ahead. So as an offensive coordinator, you know, it was valuable because I could, you know, try to plan efficiently, effectively, and anticipate and predict. As a head coach, the carryover is just now I'm sitting in the seat where the big picture is the most important thing. And so I can, you know, start to connect the dots and be methodical and think things through so that the flow, the rhythm, and everything comes together within the program. So definitely a lot of transferable skills. But the biggest, you know, the biggest reason that I transitioned from engineering to coaching is because I think at the end of the day, you got to do what you're passionate about. And I thought that engineering was my passion, but to be honest, the Lord revealed to me that my passion is to pour into young people and see them be successful.
Well, and that is what everyone is looking forward to at the University of Virginia.
Yes, sir. Let's go, coach. Let's go.
Yes, sir. Go
fired up. Can't wait to get back to Charlottesville because I want to take you to dinner at the Aberdeen Barn. It's all on me, coach. Super excited that you're going to be the guy leading our program into the future.
Yes, sir. And it's a tremendous honor.
Thanks, coach. Best of luck.
All right, thank you.
That is Tony Elliott, new Virginia head football coach, joining us on the Goodyear Hotline as Virginia made moves and finally got Chris Canty, the coach that he had been hoping for.
Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports.
I think I'm going to have to crash that dinner if you're buying.
Oh, yeah. Well, you had an opportunity to go to the barn when you were calling the game against Virginia Tech. And it didn't disappoint, I'm sure, right?
No, absolutely
exactly.
Not. So we will be looking forward to the return trip there to usher in the Elliott era in Virginia. Coming up next, though, sometimes Great moments are born out of random opportunity. That is what we had last week, and it produced a new segment that we'll be debuting on this show next on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, ESPN NFL analyst Mina Kimes going to join us. I was looking up, watching NFL Live during the break here on Canty and Golic Jr., and I see Marcus Spears and Mina Kimes full-blown reenacting Jakeem Grant's touchdown celebration with Tevin Jenkins from the game yesterday, where the small Grant went airborne there, Mina Kimes floating on the set of NFL Live. So we got to find out what that was. Chris, at some point when we're in the same room, I don't know if we could pull that off necessarily one way or the other. I'm a little heavier than Mina, so that might put a lot of stress on your shoulders.
No, I thought you were going to be the one lifting me up.
Oh. See, yeah, what happened was with my back and stuff, like, I got a thing where I go see this chiropractor, and so it's
so what you're saying is your lower lumbar won't support you being able to pick me up.
There's like a L5 S1 thing down there and some discs, so maybe, you know what, we will leave that to the professionals over at NFL Live.
Yeah, I think we better do that, yeah.
We'll see how the execution goes. But every once in a while, the execution around here breeds something special. And last week, we're sitting around the show doing one of the many segments where we put funny words to mean yes or no and then put a fancy tag on it so we can talk football. We stumbled onto gold, and our friend Chris Canty decided to ask if we need to respect it or check it. And so we thought, all right, well, we can do Overreaction Monday like everybody else, or we can bring in our producer, Mark, and try and see if he can pull this off right now. Mark is feeling the pressure, feeling the heat over here.
A little nervous.
This is high risk, high reward stuff. So, Mark, are you ready to respect it or check it here? Oh, no, he is not. Oh, my God.
Come on, Mark. We have faith in you, Mark. We believe in you. Come on, Mark.
Oh, can Mark hear any of this right now?
I hope so.
Are you good, Mark?
Yeah, I hear you.
All right, you ready to respect it or check it?
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah. All right, what do we got, brother? Let's tee it up.
All right, the Bills will miss the playoffs. Respect it or check it.
All right, I'm going to go first on this one. Chris, I'm going to check this one. I think when we look at the Bills right now, there are a handful of teams at 7-6 in the AFC. Per ESPN's FPI, the Bills have the best chance of the 7-6 AFC teams at 77% to make the postseason. They got a soft end of their schedule. I'm going to check this one, and I'm going to say the Bills make the postseason, Chris.
Yeah, I'm going to check it. We don't need to overreact to the last couple of losses, albeit embarrassing to division leader New England Patriots a couple of weeks ago on Monday Night Football. But, yeah, the Buffalo Bills are going to make the playoffs. It feels like it's a low bar to clear based on the expectations we had on this team coming into the season. But, yeah, they're going to limp it to the playoffs because their schedule is so soft over the course of the next 4 weeks.
All right, Mark, what do we got next here?
The Bengals will also miss the postseason. Respect it or check it.
Oh, all right. Heavy playoff theme here. What do we got, Chris?
Yeah, you know what, man? I gotta respect this one. I got to respect this one. Joe Burrow and the Bengals looking funny in the light, man. And then when you look at their remaining schedule, they're at Denver. Then they've got the Baltimore Ravens, so Lamar Jackson probably going to be back healthy from that ankle sprain. The Kansas City Chiefs, and then on the road to finish the season against the Cleveland Browns. There are no gimmies in that slate right there. We see how hard the Denver Broncos played after the tragedy with Demaryius Thomas against the Lions. So you know you're going to get a really good punch from that team. I don't know, man. I just can't trust what the Cincinnati Bengals are bringing to the table. Although after their bye week, the first couple of weeks, I wanted to buy in. I don't think they're going to make it this year.
It is a never-ending roller coaster ride. I feel like we ask this question every week, and every week I got a different answer for the Bengals. Man, I got to respect this one, man. I think this team too inconsistent. Them and the Chargers have basically been the same team all year long, and you got them together, and it became very clear that talent on the Chargers side and that roster just able to muster up a little bit more. And I think down the stretch, too much volatility. I don't want to trust them. So if you're asking me to go one way or the other, I got to check that one here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, and our producer Mark helping us play Respect It or Check It. What we got, Mark?
All right, Matt LaFleur is a top three NFL coach. Respect it or check it.
All right, so for some context on this one, our ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky was on with Keyshawn J. Will and Max this morning and had this to say about the Green Bay Packers head man.
It's Matt LaFleur is a top three coach. Aaron Rodgers is right at the very top of the list of like two or three guys for MVP of the NFL right now. And the depth that they have along their offensive line is as good as anybody in the NFL.
Damn, top three? Woo.
Matt LaFleur? Absolutely.
God.
Belichick.
Belichick and Andy Reid and Mike Tomlin. I don't know which one. Who's leaving?
And Sean Payton.
I'm playing.
Oh, yeah,
right
Sean
now,
Payton.
Right now, I'm Belichick, Andy Reid. Matt LaFleur.
Matt LaFleur at this moment ahead of Mike Tomlin.
I love you.
Yes. And Sean Payton.
Yes.
Chris, I can hear it, so I'll get you started on this one. I'm going to check this one. I understand where we're at, but I would even say the job that Mike Tomlin's done, considering the situation that he is in, Sean Payton having to cobble this together post Drew Brees, hell, even your former coach John Harbaugh in Baltimore, what they've had to do with the MASH unit there, I think Matt LaFleur has the benefit of one of the greatest quarterbacks that we've ever seen. He is a phenomenal coach who makes outstanding decisions, but I don't know if I can vault him into that top three just yet.
Yeah, there's a hell of a lot of built-in margin for error when you have Aaron Rodgers as your freaking quarterback. So I get where Dan Orlovsky is coming from. You want to give Matt LaFleur his flowers and give him his respect, but you can't disrespect the other coaches that are in front of him, coaches that have Lombardis on their resume. And there's no way on God's green earth that you're going to say that Matt LaFleur is a better head coach than Bill Belichick, than Andy Reid, than Sean Payton, than Mike Tomlin, than John Harbaugh. It just ain't going to happen. Now, maybe you want to call him a better play designer, maybe a top three play designer on the offensive side of the ball, because we know that's the lens that Dan views things through. But a head coach is more than just a play designer or a play caller. He's the one that's responsible for the entire outfit. And don't give me this nonsense about how Matt LaFleur has the potential to go to three straight NFC championship games, because we saw that once upon a time with Jim Harbaugh, and nobody was saying Jim Harbaugh was a top three coach in the National Football League. So I get where you're coming from, Dan. I'm sorry we got to do this to you, but we got to check you on Overreaction Monday because you're dead wrong.
I can say Andy Reid went to four straight NFC championships in a Super Bowl when he was in Philly, and they still wanted to run him out of town. So sometimes that is not nearly enough in these situations. Matt LaFleur, outstanding coach. Let me see you do it without Aaron Rodgers for a little bit, and then we'll really talk about all this when that. Okay, we might get that opportunity next year in all of this. So that is Respect It or Check It on an NFL Overreaction Monday. Mark, how you feeling right now? You going to throw up?
No, I'm feeling a lot better.
All right, there we go. Mark able to Respect It or Check It on a Monday here. We want to remind you to, by the way, also keep tuning into this show. Download, subscribe, rate, and review the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast wherever you get your podcast, as well as the ESPN Daily podcast. They bring you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters. It's presented by Supercuts. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. Coming up next, how worried are we about the Cowboys' offense? Can the Chiefs' defense sustain? And what was it like to fly on NFL Live? All of that with Mina Kimes after this word from Vivid Seats. Now, with the safe return of live events, you can actually be there to catch all the action in person with Vivid Seats. That's right. Every alley-oop slam, every one-timer, and every sideline grab can be experienced live. And with Vivid Seats rewards, you can earn rewards like free tickets. All you got to do, collect stamps, redeem, and repeat. It's that easy. From upper level to courtside, Vivid Seats has you covered for all the events that matter to you. So grab your tickets today and cheer on your favorite team from the stands. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, life happens live. Back with Mina Kimes next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Great moments are born when preparation meets opportunity. And that is what went down this weekend and today on one of ESPN's greatest programs. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And we now head to the Goodyear Hotline to welcome in our friend Mina Kimes. You guys know her from NFL Live, Monday through Friday, 4 o'clock Eastern here on ESPN. And if you were watching today, you saw Mina and Marcus Spears paying homage to a great moment from this weekend. Jakeem Grant, of Lil Man Ballin' fame on NFL Live, scored a great touchdown and engaged in a celebration with his offensive lineman, Tevin Jenkins, where he got lifted up overhead. If you're watching on ESPN Plus, you are seeing Mina Kimes elevated by our very own Marcus Spears honoring that celebration. So as we welcome in Mina Kimes in right now, Mina, How was the air up there?
Honestly, I've never felt more on top of the world than I did at 4:40 p.m. Eastern today on ESPN. Safe? I felt safe, like seen, powerful, addicted. I want to fly again. I mean, it was, you know, you guys ever do that thing when you were kids where when you were really small, where your parents would like put you on their legs when they were on their back?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely.
You feel like airplanes? That's what I felt like.
Man, what a rush. Honestly, I hope everyone gets to taste that feeling at some point in their lives. Mina, would you say that's going to probably just be a daily staple for you guys on Live now?
I hope so, but there might be some workplace issues with that.
That is a fair point. Either way, we will celebrate it now. That is our celebratory moment of the week. It is brought to you by Allstate. Save money like a champion with Allstate. Championship savings for the win. No one puts Mina Kimes in the corner. We can't say the same about the Los Angeles Rams tonight, Mina. Ooh. We got the news about their losses heading into tonight. Jalen Ramsey and Tyler Higbee now joining multiple other teammates on the COVID-19 list. How does this affect the outcome of tonight against the Cardinals for you?
Well, you know, I was actually already leaning Cardinals, and now I'm like leaning Tower of Pisa Cardinals, I guess. I was trying to think of a verb that's stronger than leaning, I guess, all the way on the Cardinals. Yeah, I mean, outside of Stafford, Cup, and I guess, you know, Aaron Donald, there's really no more indispensable players than Jalen Ramsey. Heck, you could argue even that with the Rams, they have a very capable backup in John Wolford, that Ramsey might be more indispensable than their quarterback because of not only how good he is, I think he's arguably the best cornerback in the NFL, but what he means to that defense. A secondary that outside of him has struggled at times, which is why when you watch Rams games, you see offenses doing everything in their power to throw at anyone not with a five on their jersey. Well, that's going to be a lot easier tonight. And to do it, to not have him against this particular offense that this year you've seen so many weapons emerge outside of DeAndre Hopkins, it's just a nightmare situation for L.A.
Mina, looking at the Sunday slate of games, the Dallas Cowboys go on the road and get a huge win in the NFC East. Their defense came to the party, being able to create four takeaways and a score. How confident should Cowboys fans be about their team's prospects, not only to win the division, but to actually make a run?
Well, you know, I think until we see improved play from Dak Prescott, not that confident, frankly. Right now, this defense looks good enough to carry their offense, but if we're talking about January and we're talking about going toe-to-toe with the likes of Arizona, Tampa, and Green Bay, Dak needs to play better football. And over the last few weeks, you know, been able to make kind of excuses for him and this offense. Oh, they're missing Amari Cooper, the offensive line. And right now, obviously, the run game is still quite hampered. But watching them yesterday, it just really struck by some of the inaccurate throws Dak was making from inside a clean pocket that were not only uncharacteristic of who he is this season, but of who he's been his entire career. And I think as a Dallas fan, that's the one thing you lean on is this is not a rookie. We've never seen him play like this before. So odds are he's likely to come back. I think the only concern I would have is if it stems from the calf injury and that's not getting better.
Ken Angola Jr. talking to ESPN NFL analyst Mina Kimes on the Goodyear Hotline. Mina, similar formula for the Chiefs and Cowboys right now being led by defense. Is the health of Patrick Mahomes really the biggest differentiator here between the ceiling on these two teams?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you never want to overreact to the Chiefs coming off of the Raiders, especially given, you know, the Raiders' inability to kind of give the Chiefs the defensive looks that have given them trouble that other teams have done. And I say inability because I really don't think the Raiders have the personnel to do it. But you got to be comforted as a Chiefs fan, not only to see Mahomes hit those big plays, but to hit deep throws in structure for them to be able to, you know, basically have a diversified attack that's both explosive and shows an ability to run the ball football well, and as well as kind of hit those underneath throws when they're facing zone. It's really encouraging. Again, you know, it's the Raiders, but I think right now it does feel like the Chiefs offense might be sort of finding their way as the defense is held down the fort with that incredible pass rush.
Mina, I hate to have to do this to you, but I got to ask because you're our resident Seattle Seahawks fan. Another week, and we got more Russell Wilson trade rumors, the latest being Ian Rappaport confirming what Jordan Schultz reported last week, that Russell Wilson would entertain waiving his no-trade clause for three teams. So as a Seahawks fan, I know you don't feel great about this, but do you think that we're talking about Russell Wilson playing his last games as a Seattle Seahawk?
Candidly, I don't know, because Wilson himself denied that the Schultz report was coming from him, which, you know, take that with a grain of salt with all this stuff. And obviously these reports are out there last year as well. I think what's unclear is whether there's any changes that can be made in Seattle, depending how the season ends, that would give Russell Wilson a reason to stay, whether that's, you know, front office, coaching, certain personnel he wants brought in. I think the lack of clarity on that front is kind of what makes it hard to gauge, because it's not like a, you know, Deshaun Watson situation where he's so obviously willing to hold out and force his way out. It's something I think we probably won't know until the season ends. And I imagine from Seattle's perspective, you know, it's probably more likely now than it was last year that they'd be willing to entertain a trade. But if I were them, setting aside what they will do, I still would not.
That is what you can get each and every day on NFL Live, 4 o'clock Eastern on ESPN. And, of course, download the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny wherever you get your podcast. Mina, stay safe flying. We'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it.
That is Mina Kimes, kind enough to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Coming up next, we will try and clear up the picture surrounding Russell Wilson as we head into maybe the most important stretch of games the Seahawks have had in years. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
It's a big day, a big day on offense. A great day to see Rashad Penny come out like that.
Penny left side, breaks one tackle. First down, he is gone. 30, 20, 10, 5, touchdown, Seahawks.
Andy Ngola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And we just talked to ESPN NFL analyst Mina Kimes, renowned Seahawks fan around here, about the state of her quarterback. And Chris, it's felt like every week's been a referendum on what Russ's future is going to look like. But when we have Ian Rappaport out here confirming Jordan Schultz's report that Russell Wilson would in fact waive his no trade clause to go to the Broncos, the Giants, or the Saints this offseason, it's getting harder and harder to ignore. And I think for us, it's getting harder and harder to ignore what feels like the obvious fit, right? The Denver Broncos heading into this offseason are going to be one of the major bells of the ball if they do what's right with their head coaching spot and get this into a place where they can get a candidate that's attractive to some of these veteran players, because they have got all the resources around there, especially offensively, to plug a veteran quarterback in like they did with Peyton Manning, and I think ride this to some real success even with the tough division they've got.
I know this might sound crazy, Gojo, but in today's NFL where quarterbacks have so much sway over what happens within an organization, I don't think it should be outside of the realm of possibility that you actually put some feelers out there and see what kind of interest these prospective quarterbacks would have on the head coaches that you're considering interviewing. Like, that's how far I'd be willing to take this thing. And with one in particular, Russell Wilson, we know the Seahawks ain't going to be in the playoffs, so he's going to have time. So why not be able to just have some low-level conversations about, you know, whether or not he would be interested in playing for ex-head coach? Like, to me, that's where I take it if I'm seriously interested in trying to get Russell out of Seattle. And I think that if you're a team like the Denver Broncos, that should be your priority, because based on the cap space that you're going to have in 2022 and the roster that you currently have, a defense that's top 5 in points, top 10 in yards, and an offense with the skill position players that they have, it just seems like it makes sense in terms of being able to add Russell Wilson to a roster that's ready to do some high level winning. So I'm with you on the Denver Broncos front. But I think the biggest takeaway is the fact that Russell Wilson isn't dispelling the notion that he could potentially be on the outs after this season in Seattle. I think that's the biggest takeaway that we're getting from all of these rumors that have been floated out there, because when he's being asked directly about it, he's not completely dismissing the idea that he could potentially be gone.
No, now, remember, Mina brought up he did refute the report from Jordan Schultz that he was waiving his no-trade clause or would for these specific teams. But I don't know, looking at this list of teams too, Chris, I'm always baffled by the presence of the Giants here. Like, we're going to have to start having more realistic conversations about the Giants heading into this offseason. I know you've been very critical, and understandably so, of what's gone on there. But, like, from the quarterback standpoint, this isn't going to be a quick fix operation. Right? Denver's built themselves up into the opportunity to be a quick fix spot based on who you put at quarterback. You mentioned their defense and what they've been built up to consistently over there. Part of that is certainly Vic Fangio, who we'll see if he's going to be around or not. But for the Giants, there are so many systemic problems, things that you tried to push to the side when you were doing stuff like drafting a running back at 2 overall, that I feel like there's going to have to be a hard reset in the way people address that, because that is not a job that any sort of veteran high-level quarterback is going to have any interest in.
Yeah, I mean, the offensive line is in shambles, right? They lost Nick Gates earlier in the season. Nate Solder is a turnstile, and Will Hernandez has regressed. So there aren't a whole lot of building block pieces beyond Andrew Thomas. So if you're a quarterback like Russell Wilson that's been sacked as much as he has been since he came into the league, I don't know that he's going to be in a hurry to sign up to come play for the New York Football Giants. Now, the one thing that the Giants do offer, you're playing in the number one market in the country, and the Giants will have potentially have two top 10 picks. So there could be some appeal with that. But listen, the Giants haven't necessarily shown the ability to draft and develop those prospects when they take those high picks. So I don't know if Russ wants to sign up for a franchise that's clearly been dysfunctional the past 5 years. Gojo, the Giants are working on their fifth double-digit loss season in a row. Like, for a quarterback that seems like he's focused on enhancing his legacy like Russ, I don't know that this is the place that you have a whole lot of confidence in, that the organization is going to put the supporting cast in place for you to thrive. That's why I would look at the Denver Broncos and I would look at the New Orleans Saints as more appealing destinations when it comes to the places that you could potentially go.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And this also gets interesting to me so much so because of what Seattle ends up doing if Russ is going to leave, or if they're going to try and get him to stay, Chris, because we've talked so much about how it feels like sort of a loser leaves town match where it's going to be Russell Wilson or Pete Carroll that ends up not being a part of that organization coming off of this season. I know you and I would both choose the quarterback, but if he is going to make it clear at some point that that's not the case, if Russell Wilson makes it clear to the organization, hey, I'm not coming back and playing here, my contract is in a much easier place for you guys to move this offseason, there is nothing you can do to talk me out of it. Chris, if you're the Seahawks then, are you going to keep Pete Carroll around? If you know you're going to lose Russell, do you keep him there? Or do you go hard reset on this thing and bring in everybody new and improved?
Here's the thing, Gojo. I think Pete Carroll's probably going to be out either way. Like, if Russell Wilson is insistent that he wants a new head coach in Seattle, then I think they go that direction. If Russell Wilson demands that he be traded, I think it's the opportunity for the organization to push reset and move on and get a new head coach. Either way, I think Pete Carroll's gone. I think it's about that time. And I'm not trying to, you know, say that Pete Carroll is not good at his job. I'm not saying that he's not one of the most successful coaches in the modern era, but I do think that his time in Seattle is up. When you start looking at where the franchise is at, it's time to put a fresh set of eyes on this thing and figure out how you're going to rebuild it so you can get it back to the point where you're able to have some sustained success. Because right now, it feels like Pete Carroll keeps trying to recreate what we saw in the early 2010s from the Seattle Seahawks, and that just does not fit where the NFL is going. So I just think it's a natural opportunity if Russ demands a trade that you transition away from Pete Carroll and go with the new head coach as well.
Yeah, this has been one of the least inspired efforts we've seen from a Seahawks organization in a long time. It's proud top to bottom, so we can't imagine that is going to continue as they got some hard decisions they'll be facing down the stretch. Coming up next, though, speaking of down the stretch of this season here, did what we see out of Buffalo this weekend give anyone more confidence about this Bills' potential for a postseason run? Next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.